Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette. I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Believe it or not, sitting across from me, as he always does, oh, wait, I guess you could believe it, that'd be senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Gaston, you gotta pull yourself together.
You enjoy that, don't you?
Yeah. So we have a little listener mail to lead into this podcast. So let's cue Liz with the sound effect. This listener mail comes from Paul, and Paul says, "Hi, I'm enjoying listening to your podcast, and I wanted to add a new topic to the tech stuff agenda. I'm a fan of theme park rides and attraction show effects, and I always wanted to know how some of them work. I love the ride Haunted Mansion at the Disney parks. There's an effect called the Pepper Ghost, where they make the ghost appear to come out of the wall and into your vehicle. I would like to know the tech behind this effect. Thanks, and hope this topic is fun. Paul." Paul, you happen to have sent this in to at least one avowed Disney fanatic, which would be yours truly. I believe Chris is a bit of a fan as well.
Yes, definitely.
So I have been to the Walt Disney World Park more than 30 times. I've been to Disneyland probably around 7 or 8 times. I have not yet been to the ones in Europe or in Asia. But yeah, clearly I have a special place in my heart for the Disney park attractions. So we're going to answer your question about the Pepper Ghost effect. But actually, before we do that, we thought we'd talk about a bigger topic, which is Imagineering.
Yes. Well, Imagineering, sort of an obvious portmanteau, if you will.
Yes.
Of imagination. But
it's always great to be able to use the word portmanteau.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sorry, I interrupted you just as you were explaining it. Please say it again.
That it is about imagination and engineering.
Yes.
And I'm not even sure that Disney was the first to have come up with this term, but they have embraced it wholeheartedly.
Yes, to the point where there's now actually Walt Disney Imagineering. It's an actual division within the company.
Oh, yes, yes.
As a matter of fact, headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
You.
Go ahead.
I have a I had a friend in high school whose dream it was to become an Imagineer.
Wow.
So I'm not sure how far he's gone with that, but
it sounds like it's a neat job. Yeah, it sounds like a pretty amazing job. Also, sounds like it could potentially be a very frustrating job.
Sure.
But we'll go into why that is in a minute. And when I say frustrating, I just mean that imagine that your job is to come up with amazing attractions for the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about from top to bottom, from every single element of design you can think of, including what sort of story it's supposed to tell or what sort of mood it's supposed to evoke. And then knowing that there's a fairly good chance that your idea will either only partially make it into reality or never make it into reality. Because as we all know, I mean, not every idea is going to come to fruition. Some things are just going to fall down to budget. Some things are going to fall down to space issues or timing. Mm-hmm. So, it's a job that gives you amazing opportunities, but you also have to realize that not everything you come up with is ever going to see the light of day.
Right. Right.
But, let's talk about Imagineering in kind of a broad sense. So Disney himself, kind of fostered this set of disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
And his set of standards were very, very high, very exact. And he wanted to be able to create a park where he could have families come and enjoy themselves as families and experience attractions that brought them into another world.
Yeah.
Right? So it's beyond the basic amusement park
concept
paradigm.
Yeah, that's good.
So the amusement park paradigm. I was trying to come up with something besides paradigm because I didn't want to get too snooty, but I guess I'll just embrace it. So yeah, the amusement park paradigm where you've got all these different rides and you know maybe some food stalls and things like that. And there's not really any rhyme or reason to the way it's laid out other than the fact that you don't want to have all the food areas right next to all the rides that spin you around and around and around.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to stop people anyway.
Well, yeah. Some park designers actually get that and they don't put the stuff that makes you get nauseated right next to the food. At any rate, Disney wanted to go beyond that. He wanted to have a park where you had very specific areas that kind of had a thematic continuity to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that you would have a real experience as you move through the park and it wouldn't just be, you know, making a beeline from one ride to the next and maybe stopping to eat sometime along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a revolutionary idea at the time. Now, we're talking about the 1950s right now,
sure.
Back when Disney was working on the parks originally. And he really stressed this to the people who worked for him. He said that this is something that really is important. He's not going to compromise on this at all. Disney was not known for compromising.
No, not really.
And so that's kind of where the whole concept of the Imagineer came from. Now, at the time, there wasn't really a formalized, you know, set of criteria that, you know, what makes an Imagineer apart from someone who's working for Disney who's trying to create attractions.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm not sure that it is, you could really call it a standardized thing. Now, I read some information on Disney's website about the Imagineer Corps, as they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are more than 150 disciplines, that make up the Imagineer group. So, I mean, with that, you've got a very broad sense of, you know, what an Imagineer may be asked to do. You know, there could be anything from, you know, design, visual design to, the mechanics, you know, the planning like Disney did where you were orchestrating the entire environment and an immersive experience for the park visitor. You know, those kinds of things all sort of fall into the overall purview of the, purview.
Mm-hmm.
But really into their field of Imagineering. So they could be, you could have a mechanical engineer and an electrical engineer and somebody who's into the graphic design of the whole thing, and they're all working together within that whole unit. So
yeah,
it's really diversified quite a bit.
You could even have a writer.
Oh, sure.
Because a lot of, you know, a lot of the attractions at the Disney parks tell a story. And in some cases, it may be that the writer is not necessarily writing dialogue, but is instead writing the progression of the story and how the story moves from one element to the next. And that kind of defines the experience that the writer, the guest in Disney terms, is going to experience.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that as I was preparing for the podcast, I watched a video interview with an Imagineer named Asa Kalama, who has a whole series of DVDs out called The Science of Disney Imagineering. It's an educational series for kids, people who are interested in science and trying to get kids interested in science in school by sort of putting it in the framework of what an Imagineer does and how they do cool stuff for Disney. Well, he said the very first thing that they start out with is the story. That is the most important part, because that's basically where they jump in and take off. So, you know, you're right. I mean, in a writer, writer's perspective is one of the very first things that they look at, because people come to them with ideas and say, we want to make this happen.
Right. And it's a very cinematic kind of experience with a lot of these attractions. So when you're talking about a writer, you may have dialogue. For instance, there are plenty of rides that have lots of dialogue in them. The Pirates of the Caribbean ride has lots of dialogue in it.
Oh, sure.
And a lot of it is really funny, clever stuff that you have to kind of listen for to pick up on, because it's very directional, right? You know, there might be a pirate that's off in one corner who's muttering something, and it's absolutely hysterical. But because there's so much other stuff going on in your field of view, you may not even notice it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you do tend to notice it if you're like me and you have ridden Pirates of the Caribbean more times than you can count.
Right.
Sometimes more times than you can count in a single day.
Yes.
So the writers will write not necessarily just the dialogue, but also the everything like the action around it. And, you know, there's a sword fight going on. Like if you ride the Disneyland version of Pirates of the Caribbean, there's a point in the ride, pretty early on in the ride, where you can see the silhouettes of people fighting, and it's projected against a sail. So it's canvas. You see this, and you see these silhouettes of figures fighting each other. And it's actually a pretty amusing fight, and there's several different sequences to the fight. It's not in the Disney World version, or at least it wasn't the last time I wrote it. But that kind of thing, again, is something that the writer would have to come up with. And then, of course, you've got things like actors who are involved in this, who have to record all the different voices or act out the parts. Really, when you factor in all the elements that come into making an attraction work, you really start to realize how huge a task it is for these Imagineers. Now, when we talk about the early Imagineers, they were multitaskers. Like, we have very specific kind of roles that Imagineers take up now. Like, you've got like an entire department of illustrators, departments of you know, graphic designers, the engineers, all that kind of stuff. The early Imagineers were sort of jack of all trades, a lot of them. I mean, a lot of them were doing multiple roles in order to build the early attractions like Pirates of the Caribbean and the Haunted Mansion, things like that, or It's a Small World After All.
Sure.
You know, or just It's a Small World. That, after all, is the song. At any rate, they had those early ones had to do a lot of these things by themselves or, you know, in small groups. So it's actually kind of a monumental task for a small group to be able to come together and design and build this sort of thing.
Sure.
Often, as Chris said, they'll start with an idea for a story, for an attraction, or for an area of a park, because they don't just design the rides. They also design everything that Disney does that has a physical presence, right? So, like, if you walk down Main Street was designed by Imagineers. You know, it's not necessarily that you don't just think of the rides. You got to think about every single element of the park, or the Disney cruise ships. The cruise ships were designed by Imagineers who were working with ship designers, because clearly you can't just take someone who has great ideas and tell them build a boat. they need to know the principles behind the cruise ship industry in order to really design it properly.
Right.
But at any rate, everything Disney does, even to the Disney stores, Imagineers are involved in. Now, granted, there aren't as many Disney stores now as there used to be.
Well, Disney has decided to end its contract with the company they were using to outsource the stores to. So
yeah.
The Disney stores now, as far as I know, are all being run by Disney itself. But they cut down on the number of the stores as a result of that,
yeah.
Which I imagine is part of the Imagineering. It's not quite as much of a tangent as you might think, because I think it's probable that the Imagineers will have a greater hand in the Disney-run stores than they would necessarily have had with a third party.
To be able to guide that experience so that it actually is representative of what Disney, the Disney philosophy is. Once they have the story idea, then they have to start thinking what kind of direction are they going to move in. Like when it comes to coming up with an attraction, usually they'll try and think of, well, what sort of experience do we want the guests to have, and then how can we achieve that? And there are a lot of really interesting examples of that out on the parks. I mean, Soarin', California is a good one.
Oh, that's an excellent that's an excellent example, actually.
They wanted to create a ride that would give guests the feeling that they were flying over the California countryside. But then they had to figure out, well, how are we going to do this? And it was one of those things where various Imagineers were working on the problem, trying to come up with a viable solution. And several were proposed, and the one that was ultimately chosen was this interesting arrangement where people would sit down in what looks like a theater, but then would be raised up off the floor in tiers. So each row would become a level of yes. this ride.
We're not talking crying here.
No, no.
T-I-E-R-S.
Tears. But it was a really neat approach to that idea. I mean, like, cause you really do start thinking like, well, how do we achieve this effect? And there have been a lot of proposed Disney attractions that never went anywhere that I still would love to see. The one that I still kind of want to see, and I can understand why Disney has not done it yet, is a Villain's Land.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's been talk before about creating a Disney Villain Park or a Disney Villain Land within an existing park that would have a lot of thrill rides in it that were themed after the Disney villains. And I have a soft spot in my heart for the Disney villains, Captain Hook in particular.
I can't imagine why.
It's a bad form shooting a man in the middle of his cadenza. But, I would love to see that happen. But, again, that's one of those things where Imagineers have worked on these ideas for years and years and years. It may never happen. So that's kind of that frustration element we were talking about. Now, Disney's come up, through the Imagineering program, they've come up with a lot of technology. They've developed technologies that were pioneered by Disney Imagineers. We're talking about things like audio animatronics.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to start with them.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's one of the earliest, right?
Sure.
They used audio animatronics in a lot of their early attractions, like the Tiki Room, Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion.
I can't believe you didn't mention Abe Lincoln.
I was going to get there. Hall of Presidents. Yeah, this audio animatronic technology was revolutionary, and
sure.
It's also really complicated. It was mechanical as opposed to electrical. We since have moved beyond sort of the audio animatronic age to more of a digital age, but that technology is still in use in many of the Disney parks. That was pioneered by Disney Imagineers, and that's not the only technology that Disney kind of really pushed forward and developed.
That's true. I mean, they're the examples that they use on the website too. Another would be the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, although I don't know that I'll ever actually. I've never been a fan of the free fall ride, so I'm not sure that I will go to see it in person.
It's really not as bad as you think, because I had a really bad experience on a free fall ride and I was reticent to ride the Tower of Terror. And then I went ahead and rode it and realized, you know what, this is actually a fun ride, and it's way more gentle on your system than you would expect it to be. The braking system in particular is really, really gradual and gentle on you, so you don't feel like that horrible jerky motion that you usually get with free fall rides once you get to the bottom.
Yeah, I'm more familiar with the Haunted Mansion style.
Yeah.
You know.
Which we're going to get into in just a second.
Yeah.
So we've kind of talked about what Imagineers do in the sense that, you know, they embrace many different disciplines. They're all about telling a story or creating a show, because Disney parks are supposed to be a show. That's why the employees are not called employees at Disney parks. They're called cast members because they're part of a show. And they even will refer to things being on stage versus backstage.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, they do.
You can take backstage tours of some of the Disney parks. I've taken one and it was fascinating.
But you can't take pictures.
You not in most areas. Yes. In most areas, you are not allowed to take photos. A backstage tour is not recommended for people who don't want the magic ruined.
Yeah.
In the sense that if you know how it works, if that's going to ruin it for you, you should not go take the tour. Also, I should mention that when we get into talking about the Haunted Mansion, if you don't want to know how the effects on the Haunted Mansion work, stop the podcast. Because we are going to talk a little bit about some of the things that Disney does in order to give you those effects. And if you don't want to know it, please stop, because I don't want to spoil it for you. There are some people out there who just, you know, they don't want to know how the magic trick works, and I completely respect that.
Yep.
So, but the backstage tour does give you a lot of the information about what the Imagineers had to do in order to create these effects. And I do highly recommend it for anyone who is interested in that. Also, they have a very good intern program from what I understand.
Mm, really?
So, for students, college students, if you are in California, the headquarters is in Glendale, California. Mm-hmm. If you're a college student, you may, and you're interested in engineering, graphic design, that kind of stuff, and you want an internship, an interesting internship, you can look into interning with the Imagineering program at Walt Disney Company. They, from what I understand, it is a really intense but very rewarding program as far as, you know, really getting an idea of what goes into these designs.
Right.
Now, granted, I'm not eligible for that. I haven't been a student for many, many years, so I can't really take advantage of it.
Yeah, but you certainly couldn't choose a program with a better pedigree, because they have won 34 awards over the course of the years from the Themed Entertainment Association for their different rides, most recently for Toy Story Mania at Disney's California Adventure Park. Which, since I haven't been to any of the California parks, I'd really like to see at some point.
Well, they have it at Disney World.
Do they really?
Yeah, it's in the Disney Hollywood Studios.
But is it the same one?
I believe so. It's a ride in which you walk through. The queue theme is that you're in a big toy box. You're in Andy's room, and you're in a toy box. You're walking through, and there's a big audio animatronic Mr. Potato Head, or actually animatronic Mr. Potato Head, who is pretty phenomenal as far as the sophisticated movements he can do and things he can do. And then you go through a ride where you see 3D images and you shoot little darts at targets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute.
Cool.
It's kind of a digital version of the Buzz Lightyear ride that preceded it.
Oh, okay.
So it's another one of those rides where you ride and you shoot stuff. But it's cute. Yeah.
All right.
So we are going to talk about the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, right.
Now, again, if you don't want to know how it works, stop the podcast now. So Haunted Mansion had an interesting history. Mm-hmm. It was one of the original concepts for Disneyland before Disneyland even opened. But it did not it wasn't there when Disneyland opened, because it was one of those that had kind of a contentious history.
Right.
The original idea was sort of a walk-through haunted house attraction. And there were some arguments within Walt Disney Imagineering, between Imagineers, rather, since Walt Disney Imagineering was not a formal institution at that point, whether it should be a legitimately scary attraction or if it should be whimsical and funny. Ultimately, it kind of became a mix between the two.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, there's some scary elements to it, especially if you're a little kid. There's some things that happen that are kind of freaky. And then there's some really silly stuff that kind of helps you, you know, relieve some of the tension that you would get from looking at the scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The original idea kind of came from Ken Anderson. I guess Harper Goff really had the original idea, but Ken Anderson kind of took the ball and ran with it,
mm-hmm.
and came up with a lot of the concepts that eventually made their way into the ride. And there was a story to the ride originally, which kind of has come back in recent years and in recent updates to the ride.
Yeah.
The original story involved a sea captain. A ghostly sea captain who had jilted his wife, his lover, and she had killed herself as a result. And they are both ghosts now, and the wife is actually, I believe, haunting the ghost of the husband. So you have a double haunt going on. And as you progress through the ride, you would learn more about the family. You'd find more about the story behind the two. The husband and wife.
Right.
You would also discover more about Madame Leota, the gypsy whose head is in a crystal ball as you make your way through the ride.
Right.
And all these elements kind of tied together. Once the ride eventually made it to construction, most of those elements were abandoned.
Right.
You could still see hints of it. There would be little bits and pieces where you'd say, oh, well, that was supposed to be the bride at the very end of the ride when, you know, come back. That was supposed to be the wife.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, at least in the Disneyland and Disney World versions, they've kind of reincorporated some of those elements in. Now you've got sort of a Black Widow storyline.
Right.
There's a woman who has been marrying men and offing them for their money. And so there's a little bit of a story element inserted back in. But really now it's still just mostly a ride where you're going through room by room and seeing all these various ghostly apparitions and effects.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a few of them. Now, the one we were specifically asked about was the Pepper Ghost effect.
Right.
Which they use a couple of times in the ride, but the most famous, I would say, version of the effect is the ballroom sequence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the ballroom sequence, if you're not familiar with the ride, what happens is you're riding in these things called doom buggies, which is a version of the Omni Mover.
Mm-hmm.
It's this it never stops moving unless they have to load in someone who has a mobility issue.
Right.
Otherwise, they're constantly moving and you step on a moving sidewalk in order to get into the ride.
Yep.
All right, so you're riding through this attraction. It's no longer walk-through, so that was abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And you come along you're going along a ballroom sequence where you're looking down into a ballroom. You can see a long table where there's apparently a birthday party going on.
Mm-hmm.
There are ghostly dancers dancing through the room. You can see a couple of ghosts. There's two portraits of men holding pistols, and occasionally ghosts pop out of the portraits and fire pistols at one another. There's a ghost organist playing the organ at one end. So there's a lot going on in this scene, and all the ghosts look really amazing. You can see through them, and they appear to have physical presence, but at the same time, you know, you can see through them, and they can pass through objects. So it's a very interesting effect.
Yeah.
It's also incredibly simple.
Really?
The technology is not that complicated.
And it's not even recent.
No. Pepper's Ghost is a trick that dates back to the 19th century. And what it involves is you take a pane of glass as clean as you can possibly make it so that it looks practically invisible if you're looking straight at it.
Right.
Then with lighting, you can make it a reflective surface so that it only reflects certain parts. So it depends on how you've lit the scene, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the ghosts that you're looking at when you're looking down into the room are actually below you and above you, physically, where you are in the Omni Mover.
Right.
You can't see them because the floor and the ceiling block your view of them.
Right. So they're not at the same level.
No, they can't be at the same level because if they were at the same level, you'd be able to see your own reflection. The reason why you can't see your reflection is because you are not lit the way they are.
Right.
Okay. So those ghosts are really just mannequins or animatronic figures.
Mm-hmm.
And they are moving in a very well lit area. And just by changing the lighting levels, you can make the ghosts fade in and fade out of existence. And so what you're looking at is a reflection. You're not looking at the real figures that are creating the effect.
Mm-hmm.
So the dancing ghosts that are dancing in a circle toward the right end of the ballroom, if you've just entered it, at least it's the right end for both Disneyland and Disney World. I can't speak for the other parks. Those are actually dancing directly below you. Or dancing. They're moving in a circle directly below
you. Right, yeah.
And as they increase or decrease the level of lighting, they start to fade in and out of your vision as you go through the ballroom. All the figures are that way as well. So technology actually is pretty simple. It's the lighting and it's the glass. You would think that it would be way more complicated because they look like holograms. And you're like, how did they achieve this effect? And it's actually deceptively simple.
Wow.
But really cool.
It's amazing how sometimes the simplest effects can turn out to be the most effective use of your, you know, of your Imagineering dollars, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, because you didn't need to go into CGI or anything fancy like that. It's just, you know, a pane of very, very clean glass and a couple of well-placed lights.
I can give you one other really cool – actually, two others. I'll just do it really quickly because we're running out of time.
Okay.
There are a series of rotating busts mm-hmm. of people who they appear to turn these – you know, busts being like the stone statue, right?
Right.
They appear to turn and watch you as your Omnimover passes by.
Yeah, I remember those.
You know how they do that effect?
No, I don't.
It's actually pretty cool. Okay, so instead of being a bust where it projects out toward you,
mm-hmm.
they're actually recessed into the wall.
Oh.
It's an optical illusion, again by the lighting, and it's recessed in, so it's carved into the wall. Because of the way it's carved in and the way the lighting hits it, it gives you the optical illusion that you're looking at an object that's pointing at you, and that's why it appears to turn.
I would guess because your perception, what am I looking for?
It's all about angles.
Yeah.
It's all about angles.
I had a thought, and then it just erupted.
There are actually several videos on YouTube that show various ways of creating this effect by making an origami figure or whatever, and it looks like a head of a dragon or whatever that's biting at you, and then if you just move a little bit off to the right or to the left enough so that you are at a completely different angle of viewing, you can see that it's not pointing at you the way you thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. And the other one was I was going to talk about the scrim and the stretching room.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The stretching room, by the way, interestingly enough, in half the parks, the floor moves down.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half of the parks, the room moves up.
That's weird.
Yeah. Well,
it seems like it would be easier for the floor to move down.
Well, it would, except – and here's another reason why Imagineers have a tough job. They have to consider the space they're working in.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So, for instance, in Disneyland, they could dig down.
Right.
And they needed to because the mansion that houses the ride is not big enough to house the ride.
Mm-hmm.
The actual ride building is kind of behind the mansion. It's behind the wall. You can't see it from
right.
where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take an elevator down to get to the point where you can move into that other building. That's why the floor goes down in Disneyland. You can't do that at Disney World but because of one major geographic feature of Florida.
Swamps?
The water table, yeah. If you dig down in Florida, you hit water.
Yeah.
So you can't have rides that go down in Disney World. So instead what they did was they made the wall go up. Well, the top of the room is not a solid wooden ceiling the way mm-hmm. it appears when you first walk in. It's actually something called a scrim,
mm-hmm.
which is a sheet of fabric that when lit one way looks like it's, you know, opaque, but lit another way becomes transparent or at
right.
least translucent.
Right.
So at the end of the stretching room sequence, you hear a scream, you look up, and you suddenly see someone hanging from the rafters at the top of the room.
Right.
The way they achieve that is they turn the lights off at the bottom, they turn the lights up at the top, and the light coming through the scrim allows you to see the figure.
Ah.
Neat
clever.
Stuff.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Imagineering sort of is behind Walt Disney World anyway because you can't really dig down, they built the underground level on the main
the
level
ground floor.
Of the ground and then
yeah.
built the park on top of it.
Right. Yeah.
So that's pretty fancy stuff and you never know.
Right.
I don't think the average visitor knows that.
Yeah, they built one whole administrative system on the ground floor
mm-hmm.
and then they dumped a whole bunch of sand that they dug up in order to create the lagoon system. They dumped all of that on top of it and built the Magic Kingdom on top of the system of corridors, the utilidors.
Utilidors.
Yeah, I've been through those. They're pretty cool. Like I said, that was part of the backstage tour, which, again, really, really a neat tour.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps up our discussion about Imagineers. I think it's a really awesome job. If I were more, you know, architecturally minded or design minded, I would definitely want to try it out. Sadly, I can't draw worth a flip.
Yeah, I found myself wanting to read a bunch of books that I found, including The Imagineering Field Guide to Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World and another one. Hold on. Designing Disney looks interesting. And I mean, for other people who are interested in learning more about this, and the Walt Disney Imagineering, A Behind the Dreams Look at Making More Magic Real. I added all three of those to my queue at Goodreads. So I will be checking those out sometime. And if you want to know more about this very, pretty specialized field, you know, you might check them out. I don't know how good they are, but they seem to get pretty good ratings.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see some of the old Wonderful World of Disney shorts as well, that Disney would actually walk through and talk about the design of these attractions. Those are also very useful.
So. Yeah.
But anyway, that wraps up this discussion about Imagineering. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Paul, hope that answered your question. If any of you have questions for us, you can send them in to our email address. That's techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.